Well, happy Thursday and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for joining us via radio waves and telephone lines and cell phone connection and Twitter feeds and all the multiple ways we have to communicate with one another nowadays. 414-1234 is the local phone number here in the Tallahassee area. If long distance twixt us and you, it is 1-800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address, and at Perspective is our Twitter handle. They're at WFSU Perspective, I should say. Coming up a week from today, an event called Moving Forward Together is going to be taking place in Florida's capital city. It is the 60th anniversary observance of the Tallahassee bus boycott. And for folks who are not native to this area or perhaps haven't been here for a long period of time, this may be an event which is shrouded in a little bit of mystery, or maybe nearly unknown altogether, something that occurred so long ago and yet continues to have so much resonance to this very day when it comes for the ongoing struggle for equality and equal rights in the entire American civil rights movement. And we have a great panel together today to talk a little bit about what that event that is coming up next Thursday will entail and its underpinnings going all the way back through that 60 years of history. I think you're going to really enjoy this. Let's say hi first to Shauna Smith, recently retired Tallahassee Community College communications professor and the only child of the late Florida A&M University professor, author, and activist Charles U. Smith. He was at FAMU during the bus boycott and wrote a book about student activism. Ms. Shauna, thank you for coming in.
Good morning, and thank you for having us and having me.
And also having a lady by the name of Gloria Anderson, a Tallahassee native who had firsthand connection to the events we're talking about today. Ms. Gloria, good to see you.
Yes, I did. Thank you very much. Good morning.
Can't wait to tap that history there. And as we go around the table here, and we'll get back to this other individual in just a moment, we say hi to Keith Parker, FAMU sociology professor and chair of the Bus Boycott Anniversary Committee. When he came to Florida A&M a year and a half ago, he read Professor Smith's book and was therefore inspired and motivated to organize an observance worthy of the significance of the boycott and its legacy. And in that endeavor, he collaborated with Gloria Anderson. So you guys kind of put this whole thing together, Professor?
Yes, we did. And thank you for having us.
Okay. And we could not leave out of the conversation the acknowledgement of the gentleman who was so pivotal into organizing this entire thing. And one of the most recent, if not the most recent, awardees of the Key to the City of Tallahassee, who is Gerald Ensley, who joins us kind of off mic back here. But I got to ask you, Gerald, what is that key open? Is it, you know, the mayor's bathroom or what?
My friends have been texting me all morning asking what it opens, and we can't seem to come up with anything yet.
You keep trying and let us know when you figure out what was going on. But thanks for putting this together, Gerald. It would not be a party without you, certainly. Let's talk first, Shauna Smith, if we could here. Talk about your dad. What was he like?
My dad was definitely a figure. He was definitely known for being very outspoken and very engaged in trying to not only do research about issues pertaining to the Tallahassee community and Florida A&M University in particular, and many local people know him, love him, but he was seen as very ornery, but very always with a very do the right thing message. He was a strong proponent of the now beautiful FAMU Way project, where he appealed to the city commission in feeling that Florida A&M University ought to have more of a distinctive presence, that you're entering the hallowed campuses of this university. So he was a large proponent of that project. He, many years ago, had started a series of seminars through his sociology department, and every spring they would have a theme and invite professionals in and graduate students to talk about current issues related to sociology, civil rights, and things like that. However, in the Gloria, correct me on this, I believe in about the 26th year of doing those seminars, they decided to make the bus boycott a strong issue of discussion for those seminars. And that was, I believe, the 25th anniversary of the bus boycott here. And with that momentum of that 25th year, things have just kind of kept rolling and kept going. And so here we are at the 60th, again trying to keep my father's fire and his not wanting us to drop the ball and keep the focus on trying to make things more equal and fair for all our citizens.
Well, Gloria Anderson, you can talk about this. The Tallahassee, Florida of the early and the mid-1950s was a very different place in many ways from the Tallahassee that we have today, wasn't it?
Well, absolutely. I grew up in northeast Tallahassee, rural Tallahassee. 3 miles from the city was rural. the red clay hills, you know, I was there when they built the truck route around Tallahassee. We used to walk and play on those dirt roads. Yes, I did. I grew up, like I said, my father and my mother built out off of Miccosukee Road. And my father just so happened to be descendants of Cherokee Indians. And his mother, his grandmother, and on down the line. But anyway, Tallahassee, we used to love Tallahassee because, and we still do, we love Tallahassee. We thought we were okay. We thought everything was fine. You know, we had a home, we had land, we had family, friends, and we thought everything was fine. We always had interaction with other races, because not too far from my community, there were other races. And we really never had a problem that we knew of. Everybody just sort of worked and took care of their families and got along. That is, of course, the schools were segregated. I attended Barry Hill Elementary School, which is about 10 miles east on 90 in the Chairs Crossroad. It was fun riding the bus. We rode the bus, picked us up on 90 east, 90 up near our community where the truck route is. And then we took that bus 10 miles back to Chairs Crossroad. And in the afternoon when the bus came to pick us up, we had to go Chairs Crossroad over to Buck Lake Road. Buck Lake Road all the way up to 90 and down 90 to where we were let off about a mile down the road. But it was a two-lane road. 90 was two-lane at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just loved playing in that area. They used to have, when they were building the truck route, there was a pond there. And we'd always go swimming in that pond, and it was just so much fun. It never occurred to me that there was a real problem. Now, I know in the textbooks that we had at Old Barrow Hill, there were always different names in the textbook. So it was always written over, and the pages were torn and torn out, and we didn't quite understand why. Because that conversation really never came up. It was the way it was. And as I recall, the teachers at the end of the year used to take those same old books, and they had to tape them up and send them back in, almost like the way they received them at the beginning of the school year. But we learned. We learned.
You learned selectively.
Yes.
You didn't get the whole story there.
Didn't get the whole story. But, you know, we did what our parents had wanted us to do, and that was to get an education. And however it was going to be done, we did. This was an eight-room, Barrow Hill was an eight-room old school out on 90. It came off the Barrow Hill Plantation, as I learned later. And there were people out there, it was a community, farm community, when people just worked together and went to work, took care of their families, and supported the school. I don't ever remember going to a PTA without my father. He was always there. My mother passed away when I was very young, so my father was always there with us. So with all of the plays, May Day, all of the events that we had at school, we had fun.
Oh, my gosh. Professor Keith Parker, if I can ask you that. With so much of particularly the American Deep South, including Tallahassee, and what Gloria was talking about, almost an idyllic situation. The social strata was set. The racial landscape was almost in concrete. What changed? What led to what would be considered today almost, insubordination, a revolution, a boycott of the city bus system? How did this happen?
Well, we had a number of things going on. First, Gloria made reference to conversations and experiences. I think when people began conversing about the different ways of life and experiences in this great society, and we also had the return of our veterans from World War II, especially men who had devoted their lives to the preservation of freedom and democracy throughout the world and were returning to their respective communities and being subjected to second no-class citizenship. So I think we had a confluence of factors coming together at the same time in Tallahassee and other communities throughout this great country. And Tallahassee is unique in that these higher education institutions contributed greatly to the economy of Tallahassee. And I just find it fascinating as I learned more and more about ordinary men and women who engaged in extraordinary activities and activism to live out the dream of this country, and that is making it a better place for all of us. And so when I hear Shauna talk about her father, and when I hear you pose questions about her late father, and the fact that he was committed to making the life experiences of others, including his offsprings, better, I am just absolutely fascinated. And the desire to learn the motivation of these people is really what I still find extraordinarily interesting and motivational. And transformational.
Well, we have a transformational event coming up a week from today, Thursday, May 26, between 7:45 and 11:40 in the morning. The Dr. C.U. Smith panel discussions at the FAMU Grand Ballroom and much more as we talk about the bus boycott of Tallahassee right here in Perspectives. You know, when you talk about the American Civil Rights Movement, you think of pivotal events in places like Selma and the March on Washington and some of the things that happened in Birmingham and all over. And yet Tallahassee is almost an afterthought, a footnote in the entire scenario of how this nation underwent such a profound change, and with so much of that change taking place right here. And that led us to an event called the Tallahassee Bus Boycott of 1956, which we will be marking here with a very special observance just a week from today called Moving Forward Together. And we'll tell you some more about that as we go through today's perspectives. But I want to get back to Shauna Smith, the daughter of Florida A&M professor, author, and activist Charles U. Smith, who literally wrote the book, The Civil Rights Movement in Florida and the United States, Historical and Contemporary Perspectives, a book that you should check out of the local library. If you have not, it's also still, I think it's still in print, isn't it?
It is definitely still in print, and I will, at our occasion on the 26th, I will have a table of his many four books that he's written, to also include a really special edition of a report that doesn't often get mentioned, that he was an agent of making happen in 58, 2 years after the bus boycott. He and some other researchers here in town wrote a report called the Tallahassee Bus Protest, I believe it was, and it was a compilation that looked at the the mindset of the local community here in Tallahassee, just where things were. It did some research, as a matter of fact, and it questioned and surveyed local residents about their temperament in terms of conditions, about black and white relationships. Back, this is 2 years right after the actual bus boy. I'm not the well when the two young ladies, Wilhelmina Jakes and Carrie Patterson, refused to sit down. He did this project and surveyed, like I said, locals in the town. And it was interesting, some of the researchers, I was looking back through it, and I will have copies of those available, and sort of surveyed white Americans here in Tallahassee. And something interesting to note, they were asked the question, if a black person sat down next to you on a bus, 1958, 2 years after the signature bus boycott, what would your reactions be? Would you move? Would you want to stay? Would you feel okay and just stay there? 1958, about 56% said they would want to move of the Caucasian Americans. This is 2 years afterwards. And even surveying the African Americans, then Negroes back in that time, until the bus boycott, like Gloria was emulating, we were kind of okay. I mean, we were black. We had our cohesive family groups. There was no real issue. We knew we could only go to certain theaters. We knew we could only swim in certain pools. But we were happy within our community until those two young ladies decided to say, this is not right. If I'm going to pay to ride on this bus, I should be able to sit where I want. Who then, in turn, got arrested. The bus driver pulled over, called the police. They got arrested for inciting a riot because they wanted to sit where they wanted to sit. So along with the other publications, I will have that available. And that's an interesting sort of longitudinal survey of not only the events of that boycott, but some of the surrounding energies, mindsets, where you had Caucasians saying, no, we don't want them to sit there. We'll probably move. And on the other hand, the Negroes of the time saying, okay, generally, we're kind of, it's okay. I mean, it's not okay, but it just was until those two young ladies decided that it wasn't okay. And one of the things that makes this whole bus boycott idea, observance unique for me, or not unique for me, but at, like you said, to distinguish it from Selma and Montgomery, is that in many of those, the boycotting was more of a politician's leader's movement, calling in Martin Luther King, calling in the leaders that were already recognized. But what makes the FAMU boycott so, the Tallahassee bus boycott, excuse me, is that that was primarily student-led. Here you had students just coming to go to college and then feeling such a sense of purpose to risk being arrested. And here you just sent your student to just go get an education, and here these students feeling so compelled that we've got to make a statement. Things have got to change. And that's what makes, to me, one of the distinguishing factors about the boycott here in Tallahassee is that it was primarily student-initiated, student-led, in many cases. Reports in that same publication I was talking about the students who did their own meetings. And then, of course, we had the Intercivic Council that came on board, and a lot of the ministerial staff, and then some of the local leaders to say things have got to be different.
Well, I think Gloria Anderson, talking to some of the old-time folks, and I don't want to say you're an old-timer, but of a certain historical connection, there was some pushback within the African-American community here in Tallahassee because so many of these students, they were from out of town. Mm. They weren't from here. They're raising all this sand. They're bringing down some of the wrath of the white folks. And I remember, Gerald Ensley, some of the op-ed pieces that were in the Tallahassee Democrat back in the day that were not at all supportive of what was going on here. And some of the black folks in town saying, whoa, wait a second here. We're upsetting too many apple carts here, and you're causing trouble young people. You better back off. Did you hear any of that?
Well, in the readings, because, see, I was about 8 years old when the boycott happened. But in my readings and following up in my research, I have found that, yes, there were some of the faculty at FAMU who did not want to be a part of, want the students to be involved because they felt responsible for the student. But also in the community, being from the rural area, we really didn't have to ride the city bus to work like my folks did, like some of the people did. But we did, when we went to town, we had to walk from our community, my mother and her children, walked from our community up to Capitol Hill. Now, Capitol Hill today is where the Goodwood Museum is, and that's as far as the city bus went. So we went there and we picked, we got on the city bus and went to town. Call it uptown. Uptown Tallahassee. They call it downtown now, but it used to be uptown. And we were able to, you know, that's how we went to town. Around 1956, I remember, I was thinking about it the other night, and I said, wow, I remember my mom and them saying something about they couldn't ride the buses anymore. And I'm saying, I thought about it, and I said, maybe that last night I was thinking. I said, so that was the bus boycott, when she was saying in 56 that they couldn't ride the bus anymore. And so I said, wow, we were involved. You know, it did hit home last evening. But there were many people who really were against it because they thought that it was going to interfere with folk trying to get to work and get places. But by faith, because it was, once the Inter-Civic Council became involved, it was a faith-based movement. And with Reverend Steele and his leadership, and the leadership of the, and once they organized the Inter-Civic Council, it was mostly ministers and businessmen who really sort of led that move in the Inter-Civic Council. So they were the ones who, once the students got arrested and the university really did not, you know, support the movement, the Inter-Civic Council was organized. Remember now, Reverend Steele had been in Montgomery, Alabama, prior to coming to Tallahassee. And he and Reverend Martin Luther King were very good friends. Their wives were friends, Miss Coretta Scott and Miss Lois. They were all friends. They were from Montgomery, Alabama. So they had, I'm not sure how Reverend Steele got to Tallahassee, but they had remained friends. So in, you know, the first movement, the 1955 movement, was with Miss Rosa Parks over in Montgomery. And so when things happened in Tallahassee, Reverend Steele had already had the momentum that he needed to keep this thing moving in Tallahassee, because the same now, this is all over the South, the same things were going on that happened in Montgomery happened here in Tallahassee.
Yes, but there was one big thing. Professor Park, talk about how did we avoid the violence that was so much part and parcel of this in other parts of the country?
Economics. When you look at a number of cities, Tallahassee, and then we think Atlanta and even Nashville, Tennessee, we're talking about cities with institutions, colleges and universities that pumped enormous resources into the local economies, and even the most ardent, biased person respects green. And so I look at it from an economic, capitalistic point of view. And the cities I just mentioned, were cities in which HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities, existed, and they contributed enormously to the local economies. So that's one part of it. I think the other part is the role of our religious institutions. Our churches played a significant role. When we talk about faith, for example, excuse me, and I'm reminded of the story of Simon Peter, the fisherman, who, as we know, had parked his ship on the banks of the water, and he received a visit from Christ, who told him, venture out into the deep, get outside the box, and see what exists beyond your comfort zone. And I think it was the faith in which these young people had been socialized into adhering to, because I'm certain they had heard the stories of their uncles mostly, but perhaps aunts, who had gone to Germany, who had gone elsewhere to fight for freedom, and then return here only to discover, my gosh, I'm fighting for things in other parts of the world that I am not privy to in my local community. And so I think the realization of economics along with faith propel these young people under the guidance of their older, perhaps elders, to participate in activities that we just had not thought of up until that point.
And something that I'm thinking, Shauna Smith, your dad did such a great job of documenting in his work, how massive this shift in the social tectonic plates was. We can barely imagine that kind of thing going on today. There are some things, whether it's LGBT rights or right, that sort of thing, but this was much more deep set into the culture than anything we can really imagine today. This turned everything upside down.
It definitely did. Being a child at that time and not fully understanding why my father felt compelled to leave home at night to go to help a couple of students or go out and be a part of the cause, and my mom and I would be home hearing gunshots. And although, like you addressed earlier, there wasn't the mass violence, there were pockets of things and a few businesses that were destroyed or set on fire. But in terms of the mass physical riotous kinds of behavior, that wasn't happening. Most of the energy seemed about do the right thing, do it in a peaceful manner, even if it means we're going to get arrested. But let's do it peacefully as much as we possibly can. And it was very traumatic. And just like Gloria acknowledged, I was not one. Our family, we didn't really ride the bus. I guess we, my both parents being professors at the university. So we had cars, we had vehicles. And to say we can't ride the bus anymore for me initially was like, okay. But when I realized the impact of all my friends and their families and their businesses who now even our housekeeper who could no longer get to work because the bus was not available, then I saw was realizing the impact that it was having on these people, although not me directly. I'm like, yeah, this is not right. This is not, you know, so I started to get a little bit of grasp, although I was still very fearful about the importance of that movement and how that really changed. And I think it was at that period of time, realistically, I would say, I never thought about I'm black, I'm a Negro. It just was a part of my world. But with that, that did change my shift. Okay, hey, I am different. There are issues with my skin color. And I never really had to address that. It was a comfortable world. But it definitely made a shift. We had students even coming at that time where we lived. Our house was on the outskirts of sort of near where the FSU reservation and out that area, which was considered in the country out there. And we even had a few college students sort of come home with my dad, you know, to just kind of be protective in a way, you know, and out of the possibility of possibly being arrested or so I remember several nights of having college students kind of, you know, I'm calling up, we're bringing these students home, and, you know, we just need to get them in a protective environment where you had families with loved ones whose families were in other parts of the country, right, and they're worried. Here was my father and my family willing to take them in to keep them safe.
Not quite 10 years old, though, Gloria, and did you still pick up on any fear that folks are saying, oh, we don't know what's going to happen next, or, you know, if there's going to be an arrest, or, you know, you're going to have folks coming out with axe handles and guns and that kind of thing?
I don't remember that kind of, the fear. If it was there, I don't remember it. But like I said, the community was people of faith, and they really never feared, had the kind of fear that would, they were frightened. No, because I just don't remember that. It was bravery. I mean, you know, it was just this family. And then I was thinking about when Keith talked about the when the soldiers came home. I remember Myers Thomas is a good friend of mine. And recently, just before he passed away, we were talking, and he was telling me when he saw his picture, he did not know his picture was in the magazine about him sitting on that bus. His daughters up in Massachusetts called him and told him and said, "Dad, did you know your picture was in our Civics magazine, a magazine book?" And he said, "What picture?" Well, anyway, Maurice said he had just come in from, he was in the military, and he had just come in from North Africa. He was from Midway. And when he had heard about some things happening back home, but he did not know. So when he got back home and came to town and he caught the bus, he thought everything was fine. So he was wondering why the bus driver was asking him to move, because he had just finished fighting for his country. And he was just sitting there looking in amazement, if you look at his picture. But those kinds of stories are really very important to me. I have worked with many of the community acts.
Here, hold on just a second, we'll continue that thought in just a moment, Gloria. We're talking about the upcoming 60th anniversary observance of the Tallahassee bus boycott here on Perspectives. We'll be right back. WFSU's Perspectives on the Air, and a reminder, you can always find us online at WFSU.org. Go to that aforementioned URL, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, click Perspectives. Sounds like a lot, but it's really pretty intuitive when you do it. We archive past shows. We try to have the latest program up within a few hours of when it actually airs on WFSU.org, so I wanted to let you know about that. Continuing our chat here with Gloria Anderson, here with Morris coming back, and I mean, the bus boycott had taken place, and the rumor on the street was, what, the city was going to cave on this and that everybody could ride wherever they wanted to on a city bus. Morris hops up on what today would be a Star Metro bus, and what happened?
Well, I tell you, Maurice said that he sat on the bus. He had just come in from North Africa, and he sat there, and this is December of 1956. And this man, the driver's telling him that, you know, like he said, like Gerald said, you know, you're about to incite a riot here. Well, you can't sit here. So he's looking at him in amazement, saying, "What are you talking about? I just fought for this country, and I got to move." Well, anyway, I think that he did eventually, like Gerald said, move. But I have stories like that is things that I really appreciate hearing. I have worked with many of the foot soldiers here in Tallahassee. Most of them are my friends, Ms. Laura Dixie, Ms. Inez Williams, and these are the ones that are still alive, Ms. William A. Fisher, and, of course, Mr. Barrington. But when I talk with them, the one thing that I like about the foot soldiers is that they're not angry. They're not angry. They're humble people, and they're not mad. All of that's gone. They just want to see things progress. They don't want to go back. But they're very nice people, and I have as a member of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, I have attended many conferences, many workshops, and I've met Miss Rosa Parks, Miss Coretta Scott King, Dr. Joseph Lowry, Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth. I mean, all of them. Congressman George Lewis. But I haven't seen that anger in them that you might find. And I guess because there was the faith-based nonviolent movement that they came through. And even though things were terrible, but they knew that they were bound for freedom. They knew that. You could see it in them. And when I talk to them today, they still don't hold, they're not holding grudges. And that's a good thing because they have seen the progress. Not all of them, but they have seen the progress that's been made. We do show honor to our ancestors. I do believe in that. I just feel that I'm honored to even be here just to say that we must always honor our ancestors for the struggles that they went through with. We can't forget. We can't let our children forget. And we must, in some kind of way, pull their children, because that same spirit that I just talked about, the not hating, the love, their children, most of them have that same spirit, those children of those foot soldiers that I've talked to. And so that kind of movement is really still in their heart. And we must carry on. We must get our young people. Dr. King left us the principles of nonviolence. And those principles still hold today. And we need to teach our children those principles so that they too can be able to control violence when someone hits them, you know, and you got to turn the other cheek. Well, we were taught that from the Bible, you know. You don't fight just because someone hit you, you know. Why are you hitting me? You know, what is the purpose? Why are you hitting me? I didn't bother you. And so that kind of, those kinds of principles, we do need to bring back to the table and get them in the hands of every child so that we can move forward in this violent world, move forward nonviolently.
Absolutely. Well, let's then, Professor Keith Parker, talk a little bit about the actual observance that is coming up a week from today as we commemorate the Tallahassee bus boycott and what it actually did. What all is going to be going on next week?
Well, we're going to have two panel discussions in which extraordinary men and women will be sharing personal stories and anecdotal information about the bus boycott, how it transform their lives, how they were part of the transformers. So we're really looking forward to their conversations, their inspirational speeches to us. So that's going to be the morning part, a couple of panel discussions. The afternoon, the city is providing speeches as well as entertainment, other forms of town gown activities. So we're really looking forward to the city, the community, the colleges and universities coming out, taking part in the activities and deciding to help us carry on these activities for at least the next 11 months. Because the objective is, and as indicated on the flyer, this is the inaugural activity. Our goal is to have programs, activities, events throughout the year, observing, commemorating, and focusing attention on the extraordinary valor and courage of the many men and women, black and white, who participated in this observance we are so blessed and so fortunate to be a part of.
We have a link here, which is the City of Tallahassee's primary link up, which is talgov.com for more information. There's also a hashtag Tally60 that you can reference on that. And the first goings on between 7:45 in the morning and 11:40 next Thursday will be at the FAMU Grand Ballroom. That will be Dr. C.U. Smith's panel discussions. And then between 12:15 and 3:30 in the afternoon, a community event under the over at Lake Anita on FAMU Way. Excuse me, that will be going on again next Thursday, the 26th of May. Let's go to the phones. George is on line one. Hi, George. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, Tom. It's very interesting that we would talk about this situation because it wasn't only prevalent in the South. I mean, that was where most of it was, yes. But the first 2 years that I was in college, I was in a little college town called Whitewater, Wisconsin, which I don't know if any of your panel members heard of. There is a university out there that's now part of the University of Wisconsin. And they did not have any black or African-American families in the town. A lot of the folks there resented them. In fact, one of the business owners said that if any of them walked in his store, he'd shoot them. And there was a problem one night at one of our basketball games, and it was pretty tense for a while. And I just wanted to mention that because this wasn't only a problem in the South. It was more or less all over the country.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. And as you were talking about, Shauna Smith, the fact that there was more of a social stratification that was cast in, if not concrete, maybe granite, in the Deep South, and everyone knew their place, and here were the rules of the road, and everyone adhered to that. Whereas in some other parts of the country, like George was saying, these roles were less defined.
Right. I agree with you. There weren't a lot of black people even around, and I would be interested in finding out what the incident was that he said there was a real problem, what that was about. But I don't really – I do know I've recalled reading James Baldwin, the famous author James Baldwin, several years after the bus boycott, came to Tallahassee. And his opening lines was his feelings of stepping off the plane here in the Tallahassee airport and how he felt so you looked at like, oh, a black man coming off the, you know, the plane, and him coming from up north. And a lot of his writings in his book titled, what is the title? I think A Ticket. But he chronicles his experiences coming to Tallahassee and that whole sense of that stratification and people looking at him and like he was an oddity for coming to the airport. And he said even his taxi driver at the time, he told the driver, he said, I'm going to the university. And he said it was almost implied in the driver's eyes that he knew which university he was talking about without even saying where I want to go. And so, yes, there was that sense of stratification. And it seemed different in the North, although there were pockets of things. I remember when I first started teaching at Tallahassee Community College as a professor, and I had a student. We were having some discussion about cultural differences, and the student said, and this was probably 1995 here, and the student stood up in the back, red hair, freckles and everything, and he said, Ms. Smith, he said, where I came from, New Hampshire, I believe, at the time, and he was 18 about then, he said, I was never around black people. This is 1995. He said, I was so afraid to come to the South, and the whole class went, why? He said, because I knew I was going to have to be around black people. And I said, how does it feel having the great-granddaughter of a former slave now being your teacher and being your professor? But, you know, yes, that sense of stratification and, you know, being in different parts of the country. He said he never had a black lawn guy, service guy, any of the – and so for him to come to – all of his images about black people always something of difficulty and something of conflict. And so I would like to believe through efforts like this – a more willingness to embrace the cultural diversity. And hopefully I think that once that guy stayed down here a little while, that he kind of became more comfortable and more accepting of the cultural differences that he feared by coming to school in the South.
In the extreme western part of Maryland, where I was born and raised, our home county had, according to, I think this was the 1970 census, 1.4% African-American population in my home county. Now, I knew Ms. Washington. She was my black godmother, lived right down the street from me, and she gave me cookies every day. I came walking past her house, and I'd smell them, and I'd come up and say, Ms. Washington, you've been baking today? She'd say, honey, you come here. You have one of my cookies. She was such a sweetheart. But when we moved to Tallahassee, I thought, what a wonderful progressive community. This was late 70s.
Yeah,
because there was a gentleman by the name of James Ford on the city commission. Mm-hmm. I thought, what an enlightened and progressive town this is, because I had never seen a black elected official in my life.
In the 70s. Here in Tallahassee.
And that was remarkable to my way of thinking. That, what did y'all think of James Ford, Ms. Anderson?
Well, when you said black elected officials, back during the days of Reconstruction, many of the communities did have their own tax collectors, their own sheriffs, their own, but it was in that you had to control. It was controlled by the community. So that was the first time I had heard of, through my research, you know, of having black elected officials. But Mr. Ford, I knew him from he was one of an instructor here in Nair County. So I never had him as a he was a principal of the old corn cart school. And he was well-loved. I mean, you know, well-loved in our community. I think he was a, you know, fine gentleman. It was the first. It was the first. There were some obstacles that he, you know, had to overcome and the community had to overcome. But he was the first, and he was a Tallahassean. So that says something about, you know, who he was.
Professor Parker, here.
Yes, Tom.
Your thoughts on that, too, was because that was such a flip. Just within that space of a little more than a decade. Mm-hmm. And baby steps, but still, that would have been unthinkable back in the 1950s or the 40s.
Correct. Let me just say this. One of the great ironies of Southern culture is we have couched and hidden so much under the umbrella of race until we have overlooked, perhaps, the bigger picture. As I listen to people talk and I think about my friends who have last names such as Kowalski and Ortez, we can go on down the list. They have been singled out simply because of their last names, because we associate Kowalski with the Polish experience or Ortez with the Mexican experience. And so there is a long history of people being singled out on the basis of some quality and our characteristics. But what was so pronounced in the South was skin color. But every nook and cranny of this country used some quality and our characteristics to disenfranchise or to exploit others. And the big lesson I take from all of this is if you're not actively engaged in making your community a better place, others will make it less than better. So you have an obligation and a responsibility to do so, because we're standing on the shoulders of the late C.U. Smith, the Reverend C.K. Steele, and just a whole host of others. And I think it's incumbent upon us, the younger generation, and especially the millennials, who have enormous opportunities but also responsibilities, to continue to make this city a great city for those of us who are here today and for those who are coming in the future.
Let's add Reed to the discussion here, waiting patiently on line one. Hi, Reed. Welcome to Perspectives.
Good morning, Tom. Like yourself, as you know, I'm a border state guy. I'm a Kentucky boy. And just going along with what the gentleman was speaking of just now, you know, I was a first grader in the early 60s when nothing was really going on in my little sleepy capital city of Frankfort, but not too far away in Louisville, my parents were talking about it pretty often. And it was at that time that my mother began stressing to my siblings and myself that we are the same. We have got to put ourselves above that hatred, above that anger, above that prejudice, and be more like the kind of people our grandparents expected us to be. As a result, and I think a lot of people went through the same thing I did, and as a result, we end up raising kids who a lot of times, you know, you briefly mentioned the LGBT thing. You know, our kids don't care about stuff like that. They don't care about your race. They don't care about your background. I like to think, Tom, and there's not much of an optimist in me, but I like to think that we are one generation away from never having to have this conversation again.
Boy, that is perhaps the most optimistic thing that I have heard in a long, long time, Reed, and I appreciate your leveraging that into the conversation, which sadly we are going to have to end. Please go to talgov.com. Thursday, May 26th, Moving Forward Together, the 60th anniversary observance of the Tallahassee bus boycott. Gloria Anderson, Keith Parker, Shauna Smith, and of course, Gerald Ensley, thank you all for coming on Perspectives today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls. On the phones and emails, I'm Tom Flanagan. You know, for too many years, financial planning, especially when it comes to anticipation of retirement, was almost exclusively a male dominion. More and more women are now taking control of such things. We'll talk about that and more coming up on next week's Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.